All right. Thank you. Thank you, Ed, for letting me in. If you didn't notice, I got locked outside. I kind of did that on purpose. I wanted to just lock myself outside so someone had to let me in. Because I want you to think about being left out, being locked out. I did it on purpose. I was out there standing in the hot sun. It's really hot out there. It's actually a lot cooler in here than it is out there. But it stinks to be locked out of some place. It stinks to be left out. Especially if it's like left out of a friendship or a circle of friends. You've been locked out of your house probably, out of your car, and we don't like that. That's awkward and uncomfortable. But being left out of a friendship or relationship, that's worse. That's worse. And it's worse when you're in school. Social acceptance is so important when you're in middle school, elementary school, high school. It's just really, really important. And then we grow up and it gets better, right? It does get better. We don't necessarily need, it's not like the ultimate thing as much, but it never really goes away, does it? And there's always going to be people on the outside and people on the inside. I don't want to be left out. And I don't want to be someone who leaves others out. So my hope for you today, as we think about Mark chapter 7, Jesus' interaction with some folks, is to just kind of get yourself ready to remember what it's like to be rejected. If you have to, how far back you have to think. Remember what it's like to be rejected or be put aside or to be left out. And I don't know if you can remember any time that maybe you were the one who did the rejecting. You were the one who put the wall up. Maybe you can understand what that's like too. But also just to remember and know for certain that Jesus will never, ever lock you out. Jesus does not exclude us. We've been singing songs and reading scriptures that remind us that Jesus brought us in and he's the source of all blessing and he does not want to leave us out. The only ones who'll experience rejection by Christ are those who've rejected him. Their call, their choice. So we want to bring our thrive language into it. This is what we've been talking about. The opportunity to thrive with God is an unrestricted opportunity. It is unrestricted. We're going to see that in our passage in Mark today. Jesus is bursting the door open so anybody can come in. Anybody. And that's, we need that. Maybe you already know that, but this is good news for us because we're Gentiles. We're going to look at Jews and Gentiles here, and they had some issues back then. Most of us are Gentiles. There may be a couple of Jews here. That's okay. We like you too. Jesus loves us both. You remember what it's like to feel left out? To be standing on a playground. Everybody's having fun. And you don't have anybody to play with. My kids went to 2 vacation Bible schools in 1 week this summer, just a couple weeks ago. They wanted to go to both. There was one at Grace Church here in town, and they went to the one at Faith Church, big church in Trextertown. Their cousins go there, so they were invited. They're like, yeah, we can do both, no problem. Well, the second day, Ethan was just kind of dragging. He wanted to go to VBS, but he didn't want to get there on time. He wanted to get there late, and we found out the reason why was when the group starts, it's just free-for-all playtime. And on the first day, he was just... Everybody knew each other. Everybody's playing. And he's 5 years old. He's just standing. He didn't want to go to that. He didn't want to go to playtime. And at that age, kids aren't really aware enough to see there's a kid over there. Like, I'm not blaming anybody. I just know, wow. Social acceptance is important to a 5-year-old. Like, I would think, like, just play. Hey, there's a slide. There's, games, a ball to throw. Like, have a good time. He didn't want to go. You had nobody to play with. That's a horrible feeling, isn't it? God's people, Israel, were chosen by God to be a light to the nations. So everybody could know God personally. They were the door to bring people in. They were supposed to hold open the door and invite people in so those who were stuck in darkness could come into the light. But over time, God's chosen people forgot their mission. And they closed the door for fear that the darkness might come in. But that's not how it works. The light is what drives out the darkness. So over time, that's what happened. And in Jesus' day, when he gets to the scene, the Gentile people were closed out, blocked off, unwelcome from the light, from the opportunity to be close to God. The door is closed to the Gentiles. God's special club was for Jews only, so they thought. So Jesus, he's all about busting open the door, knocking down the wall. The time for Israel to play by themselves is over. It's time to invite the new kid in. So who's blocking out the Gentiles? The Pharisees mostly, right? The Pharisees, the religious leaders, they're the ones holding the door closed with their foot. That's why Jesus goes against them so strongly. Keep those, they're thinking, we're going to keep those nasty Gentiles out. They're not welcome here. Jesus is not putting up with that. So Jesus has engaged himself in a battle to overcome this centuries-long racism, this racial tension, this prejudice, this exclusivism. The Jewish people thinking he's gotten way off track from God's original plan. So this is not a small battle Jesus has taken on. It may just get him done. Mark chapter 7, we're not to that point yet, but in Mark chapter 7, we see Jesus pushing open the door. God's welcome to the Gentile people. So it's not the first time Jesus has interacted with Gentiles, but his purpose in opening that door to the Gentiles is becoming more and more obvious. So we're going to see that. Jesus wants people to know that all are welcome in God's kingdom. All are welcome in God's kingdom. That's what he wants them to know. Not just an elite few. And I'm just going to show you, before we start Mark, there's a passage in Romans 10 I want to show you. Here's what Paul said. If you declare with your mouth Jesus is Lord, and believe in your heart that God raised him from the dead, you will be saved. For it is with your heart that you believe and are justified or declared righteous, and it's with your mouth that you profess your faith and are saved. And then he says this, as Scripture says, anyone who believes in him will never be put to shame. For there's no difference between Jew and Gentile. The same Lord is Lord of all and richly blesses all who call on him. That's good news. So let's hear Mark chapter 7, verses 24 to 37.
Jesus left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre. He entered a house and did not want anyone to know it, yet he could not keep his presence secret. In fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an impure spirit came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, born in Syrian Phoenicia. She begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. First, let the children eat all they want, he told her, for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to the dogs. Lord, she replied, even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. Then he told her, for such a reply you may go. The demon has left your daughter. She went home and found her child lying on the bed and the demon gone.
Then Jesus left the vicinity of Tyre and went down through Sidon, down to the Sea of Galilee, and into the region of the Decapolis. There some people brought to him who was deaf and could hardly talk, and they begged him to place his hand on the man. After he took him aside, away from the crowd, Jesus put his fingers into the man's ears. Then he spit and touched the man's tongue. He looked up to heaven and with a deep sigh said to him, Ephphatha, which means be opened. At this, the man's ears were opened, his tongue was loosened, and he began to speak plainly. Jesus commanded them not to tell anyone, but the more he did so, the more they kept talking about it. People were overwhelmed with amazement. He has done everything well, they said. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak.
Wow. Wow. If you read those two stories, those two events, think about what's going on. There's some amazing things going on here. I want to set the stage. I want you to see what's going on. First thing, I want you to see where Jesus is. Mark makes a big point to say, this is where he went. And then he went here, and then he did that. And then he went here, and then he did that. So I want to show you a map. This shows you, you got Galilee. He spent a lot of his time right up around here. Most of the first couple years of his ministry, he was here. But now, it says he left that place and went to the vicinity of Tyre. You see where Tyre is on the map? Up there. So he traveled about 35 miles northwest. Tyre. He left that place in verse 31 and went through Sidon and then down to the Sea of Galilee in the region of the Decapolis. So Sidon is even further north. He keeps getting further and further away. And then he comes around, circles back, and goes down to the Decapolis, which is the 10 cities, which are mostly Gentile-dominated cities. So the significant thing is that all of these areas are Gentile areas. He's specifically gone to Gentile country right now. So the question is why? Why did Jesus do that? If you've been with us or been reading Mark, we remember when Jesus got the word that John the Baptist was killed. His cousin was beheaded. Since that time, he's been trying to get away with his disciples to find some peace, to find some quiet. Let's just have some time, some downtime, and we can talk and we can work through this. But it hasn't happened. You go one place and 5,000 people show up. He goes another place and 4,000 people show up. They've been mobbed ever since then. No matter where Jesus is in Israel, in Jewish territory, the word has gotten out. Jesus is somebody you want to see. And so he can't get alone. So that's the first reason. He's going to travel 35 miles on foot to get into somewhere else. Maybe they haven't heard about him as much. So that's where they go. That's a long walk, by the way, 35 miles. Like Kutztown to Pottsville. That's 33 miles. Have you ever walked that far? Some of us have. Usually takes more than a day to do that. But that's how far they went to get away from everything. But there's a second reason. The other reason is he's going outside of Jewish boundaries to communicate something, to make a statement. He's not only the Messiah to the Jews. He's the Messiah to the Gentiles. He's the Messiah to the world. So Jesus is about to perform some miracles in Gentile territory that are very similar to the miracles he performed in Jewish territory. So they're a long way from home right now. When this starts out, they're a long way from home. But even going that far, Jesus' reputation has followed him, and people are still searching him out. And as soon as he gets there, there's a woman ready. I need you, Jesus. She's not a Jew. Verse 25 to 27. In fact, as soon as she heard about him, a woman whose little daughter was possessed by an evil spirit came and fell at his feet. The woman was a Greek, born in Syrian Phoenicia. See the map, Phoenicia? That's where she's from, okay? She's not from anywhere out of the ordinary, but she's north of Israel where they are. She begged Jesus to drive the demon out of her daughter. And this is what Jesus said. First, let the children eat all they want, for it is not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs. Does that make anybody feel uncomfortable that Jesus is talking this way to a woman? I have felt pretty uncomfortable with this passage. What is going on here? Why does Jesus speak like this to this woman? Because she's Greek. He points out she's a Greek, born in Syrian Phoenicia. So, is Jesus racist? We know the answer is no, right? But how can he call this woman a dog? He says, it's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs. It's not right to take what's meant for Israel and give it to somebody like you. That's pretty much what he's saying. So, what's going on? She's coming from enemy territory. If you read the same event in Matthew, he calls the woman a Canaanite. If you know Israel history, Old Testament, the Canaanites were bad guys. They were the bad guys where God said, you're going to go into the promised land. The Canaanites have to go. They were very, very wicked. They were supposed to be driven out. And we can't go into all of that. But needless to say, they weren't all pushed out, driven out. There were still some around. And this one comes to Jesus and asks for a favor. Like, wait a minute, how dare you? You're an enemy of God's people. We know Jesus. We know he loves all people, right? He loves all people. So how can he speak this way? I studied this out because this doesn't sound like Jesus to me, to speak this way to a woman. And I learned two things that straighten it out for us. I found the answer. Jesus is not racist. The answer comes, the first thing is from the Greek language. There's something from the Greek and something from the culture. In the original Greek language, there are two words for dog. Two different words for dog. And I will put them up here for you. Kuon is the first word for dog, and that's talking about a farm dog, a street dog, a filthy, nasty dog. This is the kind of dog that was licking Lazarus' sores, if you remember that story. He's sitting outside a rich man's house saying, please give me something from under the table. And this guy has street dogs licking his sores. In Philippians 3, Paul said, beware the dogs. And he's talking about false teachers. Stay away from those dogs. Those are kuon, street dogs, filthy dogs. There's another word for dog, kunarion. Kunarion comes from the same root, starts with kun. So this kunarion, this is a house dog. This is a pet. This is a family idea. So we're talking cute little puppy kind of word, not nasty, filthy, dirty, diseased dog. This is the other word for dog in the Greek. There's two. So can you guess which word Jesus used when he's talking to this woman? It was kunarion. This is a family kind of idea. This is a cute little puppy kind of idea. He's not speaking offensively. It's just our language. We just have one word for dog. We probably have more than one. But this helped me a lot. Okay. So it's really not as offensive as I thought. The second reason is the reason Jesus used this is from what's going on in the culture. And we talked about there's a wall between Jews and Gentiles, right? Jesus is still reluctant to feed her. He still said these words. It's not right to take the children's bread and toss it to their dogs, their puppies, however you want to put it. There's still a problem there. The problem is there's already a wall between Jews and Gentiles. Jesus knows that. The woman knows that. In Matthew, going back to other places where it shows up, the woman approached Jesus, and this is what she said, Lord, Son of David, have mercy on me. Son of David, she pointed out, you are the son of David. I am not of that people. So she pointed out the wall. Jesus is pushing down the wall. So it's not as offensive as you would think. And there was a serious, serious wall between Jews and Gentiles. Actually, you know, Jesus has knocked down the wall, but there's still a wall. There's still a wall. When I was in Israel, this is what we saw. This is a wall between Israel and Palestine. That wall keeps the Palestinians out. That's what the wall is there for. They built it exclusively to keep Palestinians and Jews apart. The wall still exists. It's been going on for a very long time. So in this process, Jesus is actually knocking down the wall. Did you notice the woman's not really offended by what Jesus said? If you took notice of that, she says, yes, Lord, but even the dogs under the table eat the children's crumbs. I'll take that. You can call me whatever you want. I'm asking for a crumb because I know you can do it. I know you can help. Just give me a crumb, Jesus. So what does he do? Verse 29, for such a reply, you may go. The demon has left your daughter. Here's your crumb. You asked for it. You asked in faith. He's pleased with her faith. She believes him. She believes that he can do this. And so he heals her immediately. He just says it. Doesn't go. He just says it. It's done. The demon has left your daughter. And from that day forward, that family will never be the same. One crumb from Jesus changed her world. So Jesus moves on. Mark moves on in his recounting what's going on. Verse 31, they move to up to Sidon and then back down to the Decapolis. So now they're back near Galilee, but still in Gentile territory. He's been here before. He He's been here before, and he healed somebody and told him, tell everybody in the Decapolis what has happened. Now he's back again. He's going to meet a man who needs some help. Who's this guy? Verse 32, a man who was deaf and could hardly talk. They begged him to place his hand on the man. So he was deaf. Because he's deaf, he can't hear, he can't really speak. He can lip read and he can do something. But you've probably all met somebody like that who can't. Their sounds, they try to speak, but because they can't hear it, they can't make it sound right. It sounds kind of like moans, and you can sometimes identify what they're trying to say. So that's this guy. This is the guy who's come to Jesus. His friends, his family brought him. Please help him. Please help him. So just to kind of get yourself in this story, have you ever really thought about what life would be like to be deaf? Or blind? If you had to choose between being deaf and blind, which would you choose? This is your choice. What do you think? Would you rather be deaf or rather be blind? We don't have to take a poll. But think about it. Have you thought about that before? If you're deaf, you can still drive, probably work a job. But communicating with people is really difficult. Not many people know sign language. A couple people who love you very, very, very much, your parents, they're going to learn sign language. Your siblings are going to learn it. But most people, you're not going to be able to communicate with. Most of your life, you're going to be left out of conversations. You'll stand there and watch it happen. People are talking, and I see their lips moving. And you can learn to read lips, but you're left out. Now, if you're blind, can't drive, pretty sure they haven't figured that out yet. Maybe someday. So you're more dependent on other people, I think. Job options are pretty limited. But at least you can carry on a conversation. You can build friendships with somebody because you can communicate. My guess is that people who are deaf may feel more isolated than people who are blind. Because of the communication factor. That's just my limited perspective. I'm no expert. Because people who are deaf can watch friendships happening. They can watch conversations, and there's this wall, an invisible wall. That's going to be a frustrating life. So that's this man. His friends, his family members bring him to Jesus. They're in Gentile territory, remember? So this man is most likely a Gentile. We can't say for sure because he doesn't say. But either way, this guy is unclean. Because in Jewish law, if you have a disability, you're unclean. Check out Leviticus, I think it's chapter 11 or something. Something around there. I was going to put it up. But this guy was unclean. Holiness relates to wholeness. He's not whole. Pretty sure he's a Gentile. Even if he's not, this guy is unclean. That's significant because of what Jesus does with this guy. What does he do? Did you see how he acts with this guy? Verse 33, after he took him aside, away from the crowd, Jesus puts his fingers into the man's ears. Then he spit and touched the man's tongue. He looked up to heaven with a deep sigh, said to him, Ephphatha, which means be opened. At this, the man's ears were opened, his tongue was loosed, and he began to speak plainly. This is shocking for a Jewish rabbi to do. Jesus was considered a Jewish rabbi. You don't touch a man like this because that makes you unclean. You touch somebody who's unclean, you're unclean. So that just didn't happen because the rabbi would become unclean. That's not okay. So they just didn't do that. Jesus thinks nothing of it. Sticks. First thing he does, he takes the man aside. Think about why Jesus is doing this. This man is deaf. He's in a crowd. There's a bunch of people. He takes him aside first, away from the crowd. He takes him aside. I'm going to do something with you. Don't know his name. But he's going to do something significant here. So he takes him aside so he can communicate with this man. So that's an important step that he took him aside. Then he does this unthinkable thing. Puts his fingers into the man's ears. Two fingers, two ears. What in the world is he doing? We just saw the last one. He said, your daughter is fine. Didn't have to go to her, didn't have to do anything, just say it and she's good. He could have done that here. Speak. Hear me. But he sticks his fingers in his ears. What's he doing? He's communicating with this guy. Something's going to happen here. He knows something about Jesus. He knows something significant is happening. So he gives him a chance to know something's happening so that he can respond in faith, so he can believe what's going to happen. So the man is not stupid. He just can't hear, right? He's not dumb. So he's picking up on this idea. Something's going on. This guy, who everybody respects and wants to see, just stuck his fingers in my ears. Go ahead and poke your finger in the ear of the person next to you. No, don't, kids. Think about that. Like, we don't do that. That's not just unclean. That's disgusting. But Jesus does it. He wants to communicate with this guy. This person matters to him. Well, the second thing he does is even more disgusting. He spits, probably on his fingers, and then he touches the man's tongue. That's gross. Right? I mean, you got to read this. And we need to ask questions while we read. Ask questions. How did Jesus touch this guy's tongue? Was he just standing there like his tongue is just kind of hanging out? Is this what that guy looked like? So his tongue was just there anyway, so he just... No, this guy had to open his mouth and give him access to his tongue. Somehow he had to communicate with him, I would like to touch your tongue. And this guy responded in faith, okay. I don't know what you're doing. Right? I mean, I really don't think that's what it looked like. And I really like that picture, too. I like to choose pictures for some of these things. I don't think he was just standing there like a dog panting. Somehow he convinced the man to open his mouth. And believe me, this is not a cultural thing. Like, oh, that was cool back then. No. That's disgusting then. That's disgusting now. It just doesn't happen. So the guy opened his mouth. Then Jesus, he looks up to heaven. So he's showing this man, we're doing something that God's involved in here. He's asking the Heavenly Father to work here, making it clear to this man. He's trusting God to do something here. And then the last thing he does, he gives a command, Ephphatha. Which if you're a lip reader, and that was a word they used, Ephphatha, like, that's one of the easiest words to lip read. Be opened. So he could see, this is what Jesus just said. And immediately, two miracles happen. He can hear, and he doesn't have to learn how to talk. Immediately he can talk. His tongue is loosened right away. Jesus touched the untouchable and made him whole. He didn't have to touch him, but that was important. So now, he can hear, he can speak, doesn't need to learn immediately. This is amazing, and he's most likely a Gentile. All are welcome in God's kingdom. All. They wrap it up with this secrecy theme again. Verse 36, Jesus commanded them not to tell anyone, but the more he did so, the more they kept talking about it. People were overwhelmed with amazement. He's done everything well, they said. He even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. Well, again, he says, don't tell anybody. This has been happening over and over in Mark. Don't tell anybody. Here's an awesome thing that just happened. Don't tell anybody. When he was in the Decapolis the first time, he said, actually, tell everybody. But anytime in Jewish country, don't tell anybody. Don't tell anybody. Why? Because it's not working. Right? They're telling everybody anyway. I believe the main reason is Jesus doesn't want to be hailed as a wonder worker. He's more than that. This isn't just come get your stuff healed. Like, this is the Messiah. And as the progression goes, he reveals his identity slowly. Because if it came out too fast, the Messiah, Jesus is the Son of God, the religious leaders would have put him on the cross a lot sooner. And read the Gospel of John, he says the time wasn't yet. The time wasn't yet. It wasn't time. It wasn't time. It wasn't time. So So he's slowing things down, actually. But they're not going to be quiet about it. You can't be quiet about something like this. You experience something like this, you're going to talk. They're overwhelmed with amazement. And they end it with, the end of the chapter, he even makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. That wraps it up. That right there is not just an offhand remark. That's a prophecy fulfilled. He makes the deaf hear and the mute speak. They are identifying a prophecy. Isaiah chapter 35, verses 3 to 6, written way, way before Jesus. Strengthen the feeble hands, steady the knees that give way. Say to those with fearful hearts, be strong, do not fear. Your God will come. He will come with vengeance, with divine retribution. He will come to save you. Then will the eyes of the blind be opened, the ears of the deaf unstopped. Then will the lame leap like a deer, the mute tongue shout for joy. Jesus just fulfilled Isaiah's prophecy. God has come. The blind can see, the deaf can hear, the lame can walk, the mute can speak. Jesus Christ is God in the flesh. He just fulfilled that prophecy. These two stories paint a beautiful picture of Jesus blessing those who were supposed to be outside of God's blessing. He touches the untouchables, and he reveals to all of us that anyone is welcome to come to Jesus. We read it in Ephesians 2 earlier. Jesus has destroyed the barrier, the dividing wall of his hostility. Those who were far away have been brought near. This is good news. Jews and Gentiles are now one body. We're brought near to God through the blood of Christ. And a lot of us already know this. A lot of us already know this. Yeah, right. The Jews aren't like a step ahead of us. Like, Jesus brought us together. So, but that's the main thing that's happening here. Jesus is knocking down that wall. This is when it happened. This is how it happened. So we look at a couple of stories like this, and we have to ask the question, how does this relate? What does this have to do with my life today? How can I apply this? Because if you just read the Bible and understand some more facts, it's really not doing what God intended for it to do. So what are we supposed to do with this? A couple of lessons that I found as I studied and as I worked through this, I'll give you three. Thinking about the woman who approached Jesus in faith, the number one way to please God is to trust him. The number one way to please God is to trust him. You come to him in faith like this woman did. You bring to him your biggest problems because you know he is the one who's able to deal with them. Bring him your problems. That pleases God like nothing else because you're believing him. Even if you feel undeserving, even if you feel like this isn't, none of us deserves this. None of us deserves this. Let's get over that. The Bible makes it clear. None of us deserves it. But Jesus overcame that. God deeply cares for you. Trust him. Trust him. We sang a song recently by Lauren Daigle called Trust in You, and she just shows in that song an absolute faith. An absolute faith. Listen to the chorus of that song. When you don't move the mountain, I'm needing you to move. When you don't part the waters, I wish I could walk through. When you don't give the answers, as I cry out to you, I will trust, I will trust, I will trust in you. I will trust in you, even if you don't do what I'm begging you to do. He doesn't always do exactly what we want him to do. He doesn't always give us the exact crumb that we asked for. He gives us something different. I found the story behind the song on Lauren Daigle's website. I'm just going to share it with you. Daigle penned Trust in You with Mabry and Michael Farron. Trust in You came from a series of transitions in my life, she explains. My grandfather had just passed away, and he and I were super close. When I lived in Baton Rouge and went to LSU, I lived with him. He was so much fun and one of the most influential men in my life. He was the first person really close to me that I'd lost. I was telling Michael Farron about it, and he told me about a book he was reading by a man who once worked for Mother Teresa. Upon arriving, she said, "Is there anything I can do for you?" He said, "Yes, you can pray for me. You can pray that I have clarity." And she said, "No, I'm not going to pray that you have clarity, because clarity is the last thing that's holding you back." He said, "Mother Teresa, what are you talking about? You've had clarity your whole life." She said, "No, I've never had clarity. I've only had trust." And when I heard that, I knew it was not about seeing the big picture. It's about trusting that the Lord is going to be there for you. Do you want to please God? Trust Him. Trust Him. Number two, one crumb from Jesus is enough to completely change your life. Think about the horror of having one of your children possessed by a demon. We didn't really get into those details too much this morning, but think about that. Your child is demon-possessed. That was ugly. That was horrifying. Jesus brought peace to this Canaanite woman's family. One crumb made a big difference. So ask Jesus for a crumb. What is it that you need? A friend of mine from Solo Labs, where I'm a chaplain, telling me about a situation she found herself in. She did not want to be in this situation. There was a reunion coming up, and it was friends. It wasn't just family, but she just didn't want to go because her husband couldn't go with her. She knew there'd be like strangers there, people she didn't know. It's just awkward. She just did not want to go. But she had to. So she was doing it. So she's on her way. She's driving there, and she's telling me about this. She just asked Jesus for a crumb. What she asked was, "God, will you just please bless me somehow in this? I'm going. I don't want to be there. Just bless this somehow." It wasn't a life-threatening need. It wasn't anything huge. It was a crumb. "Jesus, I just like a crumb right now. Bless me somehow." She gets to the reunion, and right away she sees an old friend that she had not seen in decades. Just right off the bat, this person was there. She wasn't expecting. They reconnected. The crumb was there. The awkwardness was gone. They hung out the entire night. And if her husband had gone, it wouldn't have been the same. So she asked for a crumb. Jesus gave her a crumb. It was a great night. When you need a crumb, ask for it. We don't know what we're going to get, but we know He's good, and we know all are welcome in His kingdom. So where you're coming from, you feel, "I don't deserve it," or whatever, that doesn't matter. As long as you're coming in faith, even the kind of faith that says, "Lord, I believe, help my unbelief." One more thing. Remember? Let me in. Let me in. You remember what it's like to be left out? Remember what it's like to be excluded? Well, Jesus brought us in, right? He knocked down the wall. His sacrifice was enough to bring us in. And that feels good, to be accepted by Jesus Christ. So the last thing, let's not forget there are still people on the outside. There are still people knocking. Jesus touched the untouchable, and He expects us to do the same. He expects us to do that too. You're not being asked to stick your fingers in anybody's ear. Okay? That's not. But he expects us to touch those who are still on the outside. So just a question to think about. Okay, I'm supposed to follow in the footsteps of Christ. Who might God be calling me to touch? Who has He put in my life that I can touch with His love somehow? We must never allow ourselves to become like the Jews who blocked the door closed to the Gentiles. We cannot do that, but that's our tendency. That's what humanity does. So we have to resist that. Jesus knocked the wall down. Let's not build it up again. Let's not build it up again. You may recognize maybe there's a wall in your life that you already know about that, okay, somehow this has to come down. Is there somebody you know who needs God's touch in their life? The world without Jesus is a scary place. It is a dark, dark place. Have you seen into that world recently? Or are you so confined and constricted to, like, I'm only friends with people who love Jesus and who follow him? You have to be able to look into that world and see how dark and scary it is. So is there anybody in your life who helps you see that? Who's still there? Are you close enough to anybody to see how dark and scary the world is without Jesus? Who do you know who's on the outside who needs to be invited in? My hope would be that you'd think of one person who's still on the outside, that maybe God is nudging you to touch them in some way, reach out to them somehow. I hear a lot of this is happening among you. I hear a lot of you talking, I'm talking to this friend, I'm talking to that friend, and you know, they need God's touch right now. So this isn't like, this is just a reminder. This is what we're here for. This is what, like, let's not leave the door closed. Let's open it. So if you got somebody in your mind, pray for them. Pray for them every single day. Every single day, pray for that person. Open your eye. Look for opportunities to love them. What is God doing? What's God opening up so I can touch their life? And don't be afraid to invite them in. Don't be afraid to invite them in. Because some people are knocking. And we don't want to leave them out. So we reflect the heart of Jesus by touching the untouchable. Welcome the unwelcome. So listen for that person who's knocking, and you be the one to open that door. God, I thank you for Jesus. He is our model, our example, and what we see him doing here was unthinkable to the Jewish people. But it was certainly good. Jesus is not just the Messiah to the Jews. He is the Messiah to the world. So Lord, forgive us for building our walls. Forgive us for protecting ourselves from the darkness. You are stronger than the darkness, and you're with us. So, God, I just pray that you'll help us to be what you're calling us to be, that we'd be encouraged and find hope and confidence and peace, knowing that we're on the inside. We've been brought in if we put our faith in Christ and are walking with him. So, Lord, I also want to pray for those who may still feel like I'm on the outside. Lord, if there's anybody like that today, I hope that they will see the door wide open. Jesus opened it up, and we want to hold it open. All are welcome in God's kingdom. And Jesus brings peace. He brings life to the full. So I pray that everyone here and those we love will be brought near to you and receive that peace that you've offered through Christ.